our warm-up speaker, who I have the privilege of calling sponsor, who might be pulling my covers constantly for 2 weeks after getting her to do this on the spur of the moment, but Jerry R. My name is Jerry and I'm an addict. Very nervous addict. You know, prior to coming up here, my disease was telling me that I couldn't do this, and I'm not so sure it isn't right now. God. Can you hear my heart beating out there? Oh. This is like really awesome to look out over all these people, you know. When I had about 30 days, I used to dream of this time that I would be asked to speak for Narcotics Anonymous. Oh, yes. Yeah, I was going to go on the speaker circuit the whole shot. At 90 days, I was saving lives. Before I came to Narcotics Anonymous, what I did was justified every possible, imaginable idea of how I was not an addict. And my using career was, in the last couple of years, countless attempts to prove I wasn't, by trying to not use for short periods of time, and none of them very long, and usually by substituting drugs with alcohol or vice versa, or mixing various ones to justify that that I wasn't using the same drug at all times, or I wasn't using every day, or I wasn't having to steal your check or your money. And what I found out was that maybe my methods were different, but I was stealing just the same. And I was using every day, only I was using something different, or I was justifying the amount I was using, or the fact that I was doing it through the Postal Service. And I wasn't having to go to the connection on a regular basis and do all that running around that I saw my brother have to do. And what ended up happening for me was I was a clown in front of you, but I would be in my room alone at night crying. And I didn't want anybody to know that. And I was real miserable and I was real ashamed. But I couldn't tell you that, you know, my look good was too important. And by the grace of God, my brother Dave ended up finding Narcotics Anonymous, not by his own will. I was there. And he ended up putting more than 90 days together at one time and was celebrating 1 year clean and sober, and my family went to an AA meeting to support him. Now, mind you, at that time, I was going to Naranon. And because my problem was you. And I was doing lines before I went to the meeting, and I would whine about how my brother was such a dope fiend and how my dad was such an alcoholic that my life was miserable. And I was on my way to the bar after the meeting was over. And I can't look on that side of the room. Anyways, when my brother celebrated 1 year, and I had to sit there and listen to all of you like we do today talk about all those things we do as dope fiends, you know, they used to congregate at our house after meetings, just like we do at Denny's, you know, and places like that. You know, it goes from Denny's to Perko's, so wherever you're from, you know, it's a different place, but they're all still the same after meetings, you know. Well, it used to be our house, and I would listen to everybody talk, just like I was in this meeting, but it was sounding different that night. And when finally it came time for Dave to share, you know, I was crying and my family was crying, and half of me was crying because I was proud of him for being clean and sober and finally, you know, seeing some change in his life, and the other half was crying because I wanted what he had and I was afraid to ask for it. Because, see, I thought I had to be the perfect child. I had to be the person that had no fault. And I thought if my parents saw that I had this disease, that they wouldn't want me anymore. Well, more than a year went by before I finally got so miserable that... You know, I used to get dressed up all the time the last 6 months and never left the house. It used to piss me off. And cook lots of meals and never eat them. And lots of crazy things. And there was a couple of times that I thought I had had a heart attack, and it didn't stop me. I still kept using. And then I started breaking some of my moral codes, like, if you can't share it, you shouldn't have it. And that's because I wanted yours. And I started hiding my dope until yours was gone, and then I'd let you know I had a little bit. I'd always hold some back, you know. And I wasn't... I wasn't writing any hot checks because I was running my credit cards up, you know. I was getting cash advances on my credit cards so I could buy my 8-balls. And I'm still paying 22% interest on that today. So anyway, one day I went to a hair show. It was on a Monday afternoon. That I found myself sitting in the bar and talking about my best friend and how her life was so unmanageable and how she really needed to get her shit together. And so anyways, I ended up coming home that night. It was my brother's belly button birthday, and I was the only one loaded. And see, prior to this, like, they were my problem because they were all loaded. And I was the only one loaded. And I said to Dave and Stacy, I said, I think I want to go to one of those meetings. So they took me to my first NA meeting. It was the ranch meeting on a Thursday night, October the 6th, 2.5 years ago. And that night, I ended up going with a friend of mine, and I ended up drinking a little bit of alcohol that night. And that was the last time I've had any chemical substance that's mind-altering in my body since. And God, there's been so much change. When I first got to this program, I didn't have a place of my own. I lived with my folks. I'd moved in for a couple of months, and I stayed 5 years. And you laugh. When I got 6 months clean and sober, I moved out and got my own place, and I still have that place, you know. And I still have a car, and I have a really good job, and I have lots of friends that love me, and I see a lot of change in my son. When I first got here, we'd go to parties or dances or whatnot, and he'd just be so puffed up in the corner. He didn't want nothing to do with this bullshit, you know, because I was changing. And today, he goes most all the places I go, and he loves to go to dances, and he loves to be a part of the program. And he works a pretty mean Naranon program himself. And in the last few months, what I've been going through is another layer of onion skin being peeled and dealing with a lot of really deep shame issues. And what I'm learning about myself is that I'm learning how to be assertive without being aggressive. And I'm learning that I can ask for what I need and not be afraid of that. I'm still not near as secure as I'd like to be about you leaving me. But that's getting better. And most of all, what Narcotics Anonymous has given me is my life. And a God. And a lot of hope. And a lot of feelings, not all of them good. By fear. And the ability to be here tonight and hopefully share something with you that might keep you clean and sober one more day. It was really hard for me to get up here and share with you. In fact, my lips are sticking to my teeth. Like, I'm afraid the smile, it might stay there. But but the one thing that is like a driving force to be here is that I know that when anybody shares in a meeting of Narcotics Anonymous, there's a reason for it, and there's a message. And and I'm not really sure what the message is I'm supposed to be carrying, you know, because I fast for God. But if one person in this room heard something that you can relate to that might give you a ray of hope, then it was worth it. Thanks.
I guess I should let you all know that our speaker tonight was supposed to be Crystal from Borrego Springs, who was also supposed to be our speaker at our Christmas dance, who also is not coming tonight. But we won't talk about that. Jerry was talking about God's will, and I know today that God's will takes place whether we want it to or not. And fortunately, there's a gentleman sitting in our audience who just showed up, and we've been wanting to have him for a speaker here for quite some time. And I think this was meant to be, so I'd like to welcome Rashad from Ridgecrest.
My name is Rashad Attic. I like these programs. I like these meetings. I like the countdowns. And first of all, I want to welcome the most important people in this room, the Narcotics Anonymous. That's our newcomers. You know, you hear people stand up here at all stages of recovery, but you're the most important because we need you here tonight. We need you here to come in and help us. I want to welcome you not only to Narcotics Anonymous, but the 12 Traditions and the 12 Steps, the Heart and Soul of our program. And also welcome to the great adventure called recovery. Hang on to your ass. It is a roller coaster ride. Guaranteed, yeah. Is there anyone here tonight that doesn't know how to drink, use, or get in trouble? Don't have to spend much time on that then, do we? Huh? I'm tired of hearing about the disease. Man, I like to hear recovery.
Yeah.
Because that's what it's about. Anyone here care what I used, how much I used, who my connections were? That's disease, isn't it? Huh? We have some newcomers tonight. There's some suggestions for newcomers, okay? One of them is you might want to get a basic text. The basic text is Narcotics Anonymous literature. It's written by addicts, for addicts, and the topic is addiction. It's not drugs. The topic is addiction. See, we don't care if you use beef, liquid, pill, or powder. And we're talking about addiction here, something that is extremely fatal. There's good news and bad news. We have a disease of addiction, and it's out to kill us, but we got a program of recovery that'll put some light behind your eyes and a smile on your face and teach you how to live. Now, there's some very, very few simple suggestions. One of them is, you know, you don't use, you make a lot of meetings, and you get a sponsor. As a suggestion, guys sponsor guys, girls sponsor girls. The only guys I have seen who were able to successfully sponsor females were the ones that had too much sugar in their gas tank and could identify with PMS. Huh? The only girls I've seen that could sponsor guys successfully had hair on their chest and took steroids. Now, there's too many different, there's some differences here. And there's issues you girls come up I don't understand. Now, I've never sponsored a female. My wife is in the program. She sponsors females. I tried one time to co-sponsor, and that didn't work either. They didn't understand it when I told them, but somebody asked them for a date. They had to come ask me first. Now, I get, you talk about a Nazi. But I like to talk about Nazism for a minute, okay? Now, I got a sponsor. I do not have his level of recovery. That's why he is my sponsor. He has something I want. So I don't have his level of recovery. I've got a spiritual advisor in this program. I don't have his level of spiritualism. So at the same time, I'm hardcore traditionalist, but I stay in touch with our first tradition. And our first tradition is very clear. It talks learning how to disagree without being disagreeable. So I usually put my recovery somewhere about one notch above being a benevolent Nazi, okay? Because I get into this. I'm going to share just for a minute what it was like, and then I'm going to move into recovery. Because like I said, I get real tired about hearing about the disease. For me, the disease was extremely progressive. Now, my first encounter with the law enforcement was in 1958 up here in Madera at a motorcycle hill climb. And then 5 years later, I was up in a place called San Leandro. My disease had progressed to the point where it was interfering with my work, so being a good addict, I quit working so I could use full time. And in that process, I learned that I could get more with a gun and a smile than I could with a smile. I make a withdrawal from one of the banks without one of those little slips indicating you have money, and got jammed up in a stakeout. I saw the three police, escaped from it, got jacked up again in Hollister, shot one of the chief of police up there in Hollister, got down to Fresno, there on Blackstone, and we blocked off Blackstone for about 3.5 minutes. And at that time, I shot and wounded another police officer, and in return, they put 538 slugs into me. And at that time, I didn't care. I'd reached that point of sickness and illness, where the thought of dying, all it meant to me was the pain would stop. And I'm standing there just telling, you know what, kill me. And what I was saying was stop the pain, because I didn't know how else to stop. The drugs had stopped working then. And I survived that, obviously. I went down. I had holes come in. They transported me to San Mateo, where it was something like a third step. I turned my life over to the care of the district attorney. And at that time, at 22 years of age, the district attorney filed papers asking that a death penalty be imposed on a capital crime. If because of my age, they let me plea bargain for a life sentence. I went down in 1963 with me sent to San Quentin. Got sucked up there in the prison thing. You know, it's like on our third tradition, the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop using. The organization I desired to belong to had a higher requirement. And in 1970, one more time, and I turned my life over to the care of a district attorney, and one more time, they asked that I definitely be imposed. This time, the jury voted 7-5 to execute me, but because of the circumstances, they couldn't get a full vote. I continued to use for another 9 years after that. Then they transferred me to a place called, it's called the Hatchby. I called it Kitty Clank. I don't understand penitentiaries or golf courses, okay? I mean, maybe some people have been in the federal system. I haven't. And I was laying up there on my bunk, and I spent the last 17 and a half years in San Juan and Folsom just bouncing back. A guy came by, tapped on the end of my bunk, shown some respect, and I told him, yeah, what do you want? And he says, ma'am, we got a meeting here. I said, what it's about? He says, man, it's about how to stay clean. I said, well, what do you want me to attend for? You know? I've been through the medication and the therapy and all the rest of that and the religions, multiple religions, and nothing worked. Nothing worked. And he says, man, they got hot coffee, cookies, and pretty girls. And I said, can you wait till I get my boots on? But I'm gone. Yeah. That person, first night, real clear. I heard the message. A little bit of the message. Because I'm still shaking, Dave. I got on the bus at San Quentin, the homeboys threw a party for me, and I got crack marks in both arms and my jugular vein, and I hadn't used in 3 days, and I'm shaking, Dave. Sweat rolling off me. I can't even just barely maintain it. Spent the last 2.5 days on a prison bus chained down. And this old man got up. There's people here that know him. Told me I never had to wear prison blues again. He said there was a different way of living. He said I never had to come back to prison. At the end of that meeting, I went up to him and I told him, man, I heard a message of hope. To me, Narcotics Anonymous is about hope. One more day we don't have to use. One more day we can live. And I asked that old man, what do I got to do? He says, man, you got to attend a lot of meetings. You're going to get familiar with the steps and the traditions no matter what. So if your ass falls off, you pick it up and you get to a meeting. I said, how many meetings do I have to attend? He said, you have to attend meetings till you want to attend meetings. He said, what else do I got to change? He said, not much, just your whole life. And that's what this process is about, changing my whole life. By the time I got into this program, I felt I had two things going for me. A propensity for violence. Everybody knows what that is. And unquestioned loyalty to my friends. That's all I felt I had going. And after I left this planet, I felt all I had to experience or look forward to experience would be the eternal chastisement of the fire. That's it. Because at that time in my life, I had no parole date. There was no even a talk of a parole. I'd been denied 11 years in a row going up. You talk about having a four-step taken for you. Go before a parole board sometime. They started about 1953 and come up. It's a rush. My first sponsor asked me to turn in my four-step, and I said, why don't you just read my last parole hearing? And it's got everything in it. But what I saw from the people of H&I, man, they had light behind their eyes. They had a smile on their face. And I'm thinking, well, if I was going home tonight, I'd have a smile on my face too, you know? But these people were coming in, they were talking about the issues that they were dealing with in free society. And they were talking about the steps that they were using, the traditions that they were following. They were living a program, and they made that extra effort to carry that program into us, those of us who could not get into free society to hear this program. And I got involved. I want to mention one thing, too, for you newcomers. I want to mention the word God. I hope that don't scare you. God just simply means good, orderly, direction, okay? But this is not a religious program. Everybody here knows the difference between a religious program and a spiritual program, right? It's a good joke. I like humor, and I like hearing jokes about the program and whatnot. To describe me, a religion is for people who are afraid of going to hell. Spiritual program, Narcotics Anonymous, is for those of us who have already been there. Yeah. Right on. I mentioned the first tradition a little bit earlier. When I came in the program, I did not know how to treat you. I did not know how to treat me. And this is something that I needed to learn. So when I came in the program, I was suggested I get involved with these traditions. Because to me, a spiritual program is not me standing up here telling you about my personal relationship with my higher power. I don't think that's spiritualism. I don't. What I think is a spiritual program is, how good can I treat every one of you today? How good can I treat me? Can I love everybody in this room unconditionally? Those are my words. I love you. How much? I love you unconditionally. Unconditional is my word. What do I mean by unconditionally? I love you so much, I'll never offer you a fixed pill or drink. And if you love me, don't ever offer it to me, because if you do, you're my enemy. You're not my friend. And you'd be trying to kill me. People that do that. And please, if you see me, do not shake my hand. Give me a hug, okay? Let me know I'm a member of this program. Let me know I'm accepted. Let me know I'm a part of this thing. Warden never hugged me. Of course, tradition tells me that I can say anything that I want to say as long as I'm not disagreeable and as long as I don't violate any of the other traditions. Now, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon NA unity. If I walk in here tonight and this group's throwing rocks at this group and this group's throwing rocks at that, I'm gone. I'm history. If I want to get into an environment like that, I'll go find a connection somewhere where everybody's sitting there, you know, talking doo-doo all the left side of their neck, sitting in a circle waiting for their turn to lie. But at the same time, if you talk crazy, I'm going to check in with you. Oh, man. What you're going to hear tonight is a lot of, I feel. It's been my experience. Now, coming in from Ridgecrest tonight, I'm driving a pickup with a 5-speed. Did anybody here hear me say that to be a member of Narcotics Anonymous, you had to drive a pickup with a 5-speed? It's my stuff, isn't it? What I share about my understanding of step and tradition is my stuff. This is my understanding. This is what I have read. This is what I've experienced. I'm not saying you're supposed to do it this way. Now, that's a violation of first tradition. It really is. And we go into that second tradition. What is the ultimate authority? Well, it's not Rishon. It's not anybody else. The ultimate authority is a loving God as He expresses ourselves in our group conscience. The young lady back there with 2 days has an equal vote to anybody in here. If you're clean today, you have an absolute right to raise your hand and speak your truth based upon your experiences up to this point in time. We don't have gurus. You know, I met a guy the other day that nominated himself to be president of NA. We don't have leaders. We have but trusted servants. And positions of service are very, very important. Now, one of my kids, you know, they nominated him for secretary, and he asked me about it. I said, you know what, take the spot if you're elected. Have fun with it. When it stops being fun, get out of it. Because it's endangering your recovery. See, there are no big things. I've heard there are no big things in NA. I believe there is one big thing. And it's not going out. It's not getting back. It's not getting back. That's the only thing. And I don't care how many times you've gone out or whatever else. If you're here tonight, that tells me you've got that level of willingness to be a part of this thing. That's what our third tradition's about. The requirement for membership. No, willingness to stop. That's one of the main things that held me in this program. Nobody told me I had to quit. Because I'd reached that level of addiction where I quit quitting. Because I knew I couldn't quit. But they asked me, can you go one day? I told them, yeah, I can go one day. I've been locked up or out of money or slammed down or prison by somebody. I know I can go one day. And it was like, you know, a lady had come in to a meeting. Lady by the name of Golden, very, very important to my program. And I'm still shake and bake. I'm in early recovery. And by the way, for especially you newcomers, I have found there's 3 stages to recovery. There is early recovery, and early recovery. Yeah, stop growing. This lady comes in, about 20 years old. I'm sitting all the way in the back, where the newcomer sits, all the way in the back. We're all paranoid. We don't want anybody standing behind us or anything. And when they introduced her, to call her up to the podium, you know, I've been checking her out since she walked in. You know, I've been down there about 17 and a half now. And they call her up. I damn near fall out of my chair checking her out. You know what I mean? And when they introduced her, they said she just picked up a 2-year chip. I get an attitude. I'm going, you know what? This little girl can't be as tough as me. Huh? Can't be as tough. She isn't doing double act and five other felonies and escapes and shooting people. Da, 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 da. And she got up there that night, introduced herself. We all yelled at her. And she looked down at the room. There's 60 or 70 of us there. And talking about, is there anyone here tonight just feeling shitty? And then I looked inside and I'm raggedy, you know. I raised my hand hoping too, you know, maybe this Loose girl will talk to me after the meet, you know what I mean? I was filled with that arrogance and false pride. I raised my hand, yeah, me, you know. This little girl looked at me and said, well, if you're tired of feeling shitty, stop doing shitty things. I'm going, what a concept. I went home and took all my books by Freud and Jung and Younger and all them people and threw them away. It is the program of Narcotics Anonymous is that simple. Half of my program when I came in was stopping the pain, was stopping hurting me. It's that simple. Through tradition, I just went through a thing with my sponsor. I've sat in these meetings for a minute. And all of a sudden, man, I find myself, I want to rag on the newcomers because they didn't use as much dope as I did, hadn't committed as many felonies as I did, hadn't spent as many years in prison as I did. And that's not Narcotics Anonymous. That's something else. So I call my sponsor up, and he's got a background like me. He and I were in Folsom in the 60s. He got into recovery, then I followed him, and we've been in the recovery ever since. And he says, man, I'm glad you called. I'm going through basically the same thing dealing with them newcomers. I said, well, what'd you do? He said, same thing you did. I called my sponsor. Well, what'd your sponsor tell you? He said, he suggested that I write about being a low bottom snob. Yeah. There's no big eyes you never use in this program. Who don't care what you use, man, come in and get this thing called recovery. See, this disease I've learned doesn't give a shit what number is on the back of my chest. Doesn't care how many meetings I go to, who's my sponsor, how many people I find. Doesn't care. It's out to kill me today. My body armor, 12 steps, 12 traditions. And if you get a little bored, work with the newcomer. Those of you that laugh know, really know what I'm talking about. For tradition, we talk about autonomy. Autonomy simply means self-governing. What I've done with traditions is personalize them. Just simply personalize them. You know, I learned to disagree without being disagreeable. You know, I learned that, you know what, nobody gets say-so in this program. Everybody is welcome in this program. In that fourth tradition, where we're talking about each group is autonomous, that means each of you here is self-governing. Each of you can do anything you want to do, say anything you want to think, do anything you want to do. I usually limit it to here. When you get to the end of my nose, I go in the first tradition and I'll check in with you. Mama, what are you doing? Have you called your sponsor lately? Have you been to a meeting? Simple things. Very, very simple things. Fifth tradition. What is our primary purpose? It's to carry the message, isn't it? To the addict is still suffering. I've never met anybody in recovery that didn't go through it. No one. I haven't. Now, if you look at the lives of the prophets, every one of them went through it. That's what I call bullshit and rhino. Huh? What I've learned today is, it's just simply life. You know, I don't look for the uglies to surface. But when they do, I'm not surprised. And when they do, I got steps and traditions to put into work. Now, I was experiencing some roughness here, you know, one more time. I'm in total violation of our 12th tradition. We talk about, you know, principles before personalities. I'm into a personality thing. And I'm looking at this guy and all I can do is see a crosshair on his forehead. And one more time, you know, I call my sponsor and I tell him, man, this guy is a real idiot. You know, you're ragging on him, taking his fourth step, right? And so my sponsor says, okay, so I got a suggestion for you. And I thought, what's that? So go down to the hardware store, get you a 4-pound short handle sledgehammer, and carry it to meetings for the next week. Huh? As a reminder that you have more tools today to deal with life than old behavior. First thing out of my mouth is, man, you know how I'm going to look? Yeah. Tell me about it. No, I'll touch on this on that sixth step when we talk about the defects of character. You know, there's a difference between showing up for a meeting looking like, you know, Neiman Marcus on the outside and on the inside is feeling like a Kmart Blue Light Special. Huh? I like that sixth tradition. Sixth tradition to me is just not doing anything. Huh? We don't endorse. I'm a member of Narcotics Anonymous. If I want to quote a book, it will be the basic text. If I want to carry a message, it is the message of Narcotics Anonymous. If I want to hear a message other than the true message of Narcotics Anonymous, I will go to another fellowship. I don't say the S word. I don't say the F word. I do not violate tradition. I practice a religion. I do not name that religion because that would be an endorsement from the quotient. Violation of sixth tradition. I don't use the nomenclature of any other fellowship. I am a member of Narcotics Anonymous, and I am proud. I carry this belt with this belt buckle on it wherever I go. I make sure that I try to be the best basic test I can be. It's very clear. In terms of that sixth tradition, if I'm up here carrying a different message, what am I telling the newcomers? Here, go to another fellowship. Ours don't work. Isn't it? I'm here to bear witness that Narcotics Anonymous works. And this is what we're about. I am an addict. And I am actively involved in my own recovery. And I love this program. I like seven tradition. I make payments on my truck today. Huh? I make payments on a house. I make payments like the lady was talking about on a credit card. Oh, I was home a year and Bank of America sent me a pre-approved gold credit card. You talking about getting in touch with this disease? Huh? You just go up there, you don't have to give money. Get a little card. And it's like, what I got in touch with was one more way that disease surfaces. Man, I get in a bad state. I want to feel good and feel good one more time. When this disease takes over, it tells me feel good's outside of me. Feel good is a jacket. Feel good's a new TV. Huh? And I got to using this credit card. First thing I put on was a big color TV set. Second thing was a motorcycle. And I think about the third thing, my wife was going to leave me. Felt good for a minute, and when that bill came in, boy, was that sick. Just like using it. Huh? It's time to pay, and I don't want to pay. But that seventh edition is good. We're self-supporting through our own contribution. You know, my higher power blessed my wife and I in the mortgage company with enough money to make a down payment on a home, and we got an extra bedroom because I take addicts home, and I detox them there. And the rules are simple, you know. No drinking, no using. You work the steps to the best of your ability on a daily basis. You make a meeting every night and you read the book the first 30 days. After 30 days, your job is to get a job. I carry the message of Narcotics Anonymous. I do not carry the addict. And it's that simple. There's a fine line between carrying the message and enabling. Just a real fine line. I always want to fix it for everybody. I really do. And I get real protective at times. But I, you know, that's part of my stuff, part of my program, the things that I get in touch with. And I, you know, these little girls come stumbling in here. And I got into that thing about time. Now, I'll tell you in a minute, time is shit. Time is when you don't drink, you don't use, you don't work the steps, you don't die. Narcotics Anonymous is about recovery. Good example of time is when you're sitting at a meeting, you look over and here's someone with rubbing a multiple-year chip in one hand and the newcomer's ass in the other one, right? And you girls ought to really cut that out. I'll jump on up here to the 12th tradition here right quick. Simple, isn't it? We're talking about principles before personalities. Everyone here has seen the movie Bambi. Bambi. Oh, come on. You guys aren't that much denial, are you? You're not that tough here. Okay. You remember Thumper, the little rabbit? And you remember Thumper be ragging on everybody, right? Well, he take her four steps in a minute, going pop, 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 pop. You remember what Thumper's mother used to tell him? If you haven't got something nice to say, don't say anything at all. That, to me, is the essence of the 12th tradition. I'm down in L.A. I step out for what we call a little serenity break. They got a bunch of non-smoking Nazis down there running meetings. And this guy comes up underneath me, and he starts telling me all this smut on another member of the program. And all of a sudden, I'm not working my program. I'm not listening to his program. I'm involved in somebody else's program. And that's not Narcotics Anonymous. And I tripped on. I got back in self. We went back in. They asked for a volunteer. I raised my hand. And I told them, look, I don't know if this is penitentiary rules or not. But we have some cool rules there when you start hot-mouthing somebody. I said, but I really think this 12th tradition, and so just, you know, it's for everybody to kind of know where I'm at. The next time a member of this program comes up here and tells me something stupid about another member of this program, I'm going to go tell. And I'm going to ask you, have you told them? If you haven't, I'm going to give you an opportunity to tell them. Did you know from that point on, nobody ever said anything stupid to me about another member of this program? I like that program. Huh? I like that program. I don't want to hear it. You know, that goes back into the third tradition, doesn't it? Requirement for membership. We don't have to dress a certain way, walk a certain way, talk a certain way. And we're addicts. We're in here. We're just, you know, one more day trying to get some of this recovery. I thought a little bit about that first step. First step is clear. It says we're powerless over our addictions, doesn't it? Didn't say anything about drugs. Now, I haven't, you know, it's been a minute since I've used, so I must be okay because I'm not using today, right? I don't have to work a program. Let me tell you, this disease services in all aspects of my life. It does. But I have an understanding of step and tradition that can get me through anything. I mean, through anything. Acceptance. Now, I hear this thing about first step talking about, gee, you know, I am powerless over people, places, and things. But, and when I hear that, what I hear is a cop-out. So I go, gee, I don't have to do anything. Huh? I'm powerless. And I'm going to scream at these people, yeah, you know what? I am powerless over people, places, and things. But I'm not powerless over the working my other 11 steps, 2 through 12. That's my choice. And Narcotics Anonymous has taught me I have choices today. One of the choices is to use. The other choice is to stay actively involved in my own recovery. The only reason I'm still in recovery right now, I'm having more fun in recovery than I ever did out there using. Huh? I heard this said that I always kind of add or change things. You know, my worst day in recovery is 100 times better than 2 days after I used. Yeah, because it worked for me for a minute. Now, I hear people talking about, gee, my worst day in recovery is 100 times better than any day I used. And I want to ask them, God, what kind of drugs are you using? Huh? Step one is acceptance. Acceptance of who I am. And I'm an addict. I'm powerless. Huh? And be able to get in touch with not only am I powerless over the disease, I am powerless over the people around me. I really am. That's the reason I have personalized the traditions, used tradition as part of my spiritual program. Because I didn't understand you people. And I used to talk about them in that six step, talking about the defects of the character. The only defect of character I had was dealing with your defects. Now, I didn't react. Because my disease surfaces when I interact with you. My disease surfaces when I interact with me. Because my head will mug me in a minute. I used to think it only mugged me when I was under the influence. So I'm like, gee, I'm really misunderstood, and you know, nobody understands me, and I use a lot. You know, just little things here and there. And what I got in touch with, you know, the flip side, I used to think the flip side of honesty was one more time being a liar, a thief, and a cheat. But I've learned in this program that the flip side of honesty is denial. Because as long as I'm in denial over my issues, I will not work on them. I will carry them with me forever. And that first step is very powerful. To me, the first step is the identification of the problem. I am the problem. It's here. It's inside my head. It's not up. It's here. My reaction to life. And I have a choice today whether or not to stay in the problem or move into the solution. You know, I hear people, what I call PMS, piss, moan, snivel. And they sit in the meetings just whining and crying, and I just want to scream at them. I don't, because I violate tradition if I scream at them. But I just want to share with them, you know what? Why don't you get out of step one? Huh? Step one for me has always been the identification of the problem. 2 through 12 is solution. I can once identify the problem, then I'm out of denial over it, then I can take what? Action. That's like if you get a kilo of your drug of choice sitting in front of you. See, it never sitting in front of me never made me feel good. I had to take it and slam it. Huh? That's when I felt good. If I'm sitting here with a book, The Basic Text of Narcotics Anonymous, how's that going to make me feel? No, it's not. Until what? I used it. Huh? This is a program of action. Recovery is not an out. Recovery is an action verb. Hmm? And as long as you're sitting in the middle of it and not taking action, you're going to sit in the middle of it a long time. Guarantee it. Until you get up or somebody pulls you out of it and talking about here. Suggest you might want to work the steps for a minute. You know, they really do work. There was a sign I saw at a meeting that says, the elevator to recovery is out of order. Take the steps. I like the second step. Second step for me, you're talking about the insanity, okay? Came to blame the power greater than ourselves to restore us to sanity. So it must have been at one time we were not as crazy as we were or got. To me, to check my level, current level of insanity, what I get into, something surfaces. And that's step one, identify the problem. Step two, I ask myself, this is an action step. What is it that I want to do? And man, I let the disease come out. Man, you know, it's like, you know, these little hard bodies come floating in, and it's like, gee, what do I want to do? And I get to write on it, you know what I mean? And it's all the way from, you know, depending on what the problem is, I've gone to one extreme of trying to secure a small nuclear device to plant it up underneath their car, you know, and then it goes all the way down to praying for them. Then I get into the second question of my second step, and this is to determine whether or not I'm still insane. My second question is, what's best for me? What is best for me? I have all my options listed out here, and the answer comes up that what is best for me? I know I'm totally crazy when I can't do what is best for me. When I go into the denial over that answer, and one more time, no, I want to do what I want to do when I want to do it. And I get real clear on that. Second step also tells me that nothing can happen to me without the permission of my higher power. So whatever's coming my way, I've earned that one. And my higher power tells me, you know what, it's like we float into that third step. Third step is a guarantee to me that God will give me nothing I can't handle. Nothing. And we go through changes. There's people here tonight, we're going through some changes together. Not alone, but together. So we get setting up all these neat guarantees. We look at that third step. Third step is real simple, isn't it? You know, we turned our will and our lives over the care of God as we understood it. Now, my understanding of God today, he's not an addict. He's not an enabler. Huh? He's not a homeboy or a crime partner, a co-defendant. Huh? I don't go into the middle of my living room, drop my drawers, take a big dump, walk away from talking about, God, you want to clean this up when I'm gone? Huh? To me, my higher power doesn't work that way. It doesn't. When I first encountered this third step, I go to my sponsor talking about, man, how come I got to take a third step? I'm arguing with him all the way. You know, a real knucklehead. And he looks at me and says, man, where are you at right now? I'm a California State Prison. How many years have you been here? And at that time, I said, about 18 years. How much time are you doing? And I tell him, double life, 5 other felony convictions. He said, well, when are you going home? I tell him, I don't know. And he says, and you're wondering why you should turn your will over? Flip side of that is, if you're sponsoring somebody and they want to argue with you about the third step, Tom, look, you take the third step, you turn your life and you go over the care of God, I'll guarantee you an idiot won't be in charge of it any longer. Okay? Fourth step. Coming in from the desert, there was me, my wife, Hank, Willie, Waylon, Patsy, listen to this song, you know, talking about old Hank Williams, Hank Williams Sr., talking about if you're minding your own business, you won't be minding mine. Fourth step, isn't it? That says, my fourth step. And when I start walking on water is when I'll start taking your fourth step. Little thumb. I came home, I get to a meeting, and I'm sitting there, and you know, like I've been raised H&I, and H&I people, if you know them, they're real crazy. They're real good people. And all the people are doing at the meeting are shitting on everybody. Huh? Well, you should be doing this. You should. They somebody share from here and a lot of pain. Everybody shit. You know, I'm going, man, I didn't expect, this is new to me. I didn't think, I had to ask you, this is Narcotics Anonymous. I thought maybe I was the one in the self-help program. You know? And so they finally called on me as the new kid on the block, and I told them, look at here. You know, I just come out of the penitentiary, just got through serving 24 years. Double I, five other felony convictions, and I've been raised H&I. And so, by the way, before any of you start shitting on me, so I have a sponsor in this program. His sponsor is a member of this program. Huh? He makes suggestions to me how to work this program. However, if you've got a 30-year chip in Narcotics Anonymous, please feel free to make suggestions to me on how to work my program. Or if you walk on water, you know, make suggestions. But if you're not my sponsor, you don't have a 30-year chip, you don't walk on water, keep my name out of your mouth and your hot breath out of my face. Yeah. Then I went home and snuggled with my wife and somebody gave me their telephone number. Yeah. Fourth step is easy. You lived through it already, didn't you? You survived it. My last fourth step, and I generally take one at least once a year, and I've never seen anybody complete a fourth step. I add chapters to mine. Because one of the things I heard in this program is that more will be revealed. And when that fourth step comes up, man, it's a rush. It's a freedom step. Huh? It taught me about habits and attitudes and patterns. It showed me what was working and what wasn't working. Those things that weren't working, get rid of them. Those things that are working, expand on them. It's that simple. And I developed three great truths for me for my fourth step. Number one, there ain't no secrets. That one you promised to take to the grave, you're going to tell somebody. Because we're only as sick as our secrets. Number two, since I had been in recovery, I had made a mistake. I just had a tremendous number of learning experiences. It can only be a mistake if I don't learn from them. And I know from my third step that God will give me nothing I can't handle. Nothing. Give me an example on terms of 1, 2, and 3. Oh, the third thing I mentioned in my fourth step that I've learned, there are no victims. There's only volunteers. There isn't a person in this room that doesn't know right from wrong. Here, hurt me, beat me, make me write that check. I love it. Come in here with, you know, that's like when I did my fifth step. Now, I've been playing on these psychiatrists all these years, right? And they come in talking about, man, how come all this violence? I said, well, my daddy beat me, my mama was an alcoholic, and whoa, 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 whoa. And they tell me, oh, poor baby. Oh, poor baby, we don't understand now. I go out and do something else violent. They tell me, man, why'd you do that? Said, well, my daddy beat me and my mama was an alcoholic. Whoa, 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 oh, poor baby. Yeah? They were co-signing everything. I start this with my sponsor. I go through this whole little trip, you know, and my sponsor looks at me and says, so what? Huh? What's that got to do with today? It doesn't. But I needed to get the garbage out so I could get the good stuff in. You know, when I went home, I took some stuff out of the garbage dump and I was able to identify with it. Huh? Out there, but I also learned that once you clear away that garbage, man, you can build a foundation. You can build a foundation. I'm going to give a couple examples of 1, 2, 3, because I think these are the most important, especially, you know, in coming into this program. In the last 20 months, I've undergone surgery, major surgery, 3 times now. I'm down in Los Angeles, I'm on my motorcycle, and I crash it, I roll it, the thing rolls on me, crushes my right ankle. I had to get people to get it up off me. They do the 911 call, and they got me on the side of the street to get my boot off, my sock off. and my ankle looks like a nickel balloon, and I think I'm on an acid trip because the color is going into it. And I think, well, being the good addict I am, I try and stand on it again just to make sure it wasn't working right, you know. And so they stretched me out. You know what? That pain hit. I got real scared. I was like, one more time, the pain's there, and I want it to stop, and the only thing I'm thinking about is Demerol. It's like I was out there again. And I know my head told me, you know what, you're hurt, you're going to be under the care of a physician, it's okay. And the ambulance gets me, and I try and hold hands with the female attendant. She want to hold hands, and they roll me in there, and I'm on this gurney in the emergency room, and this guy with a little white spot in the stethoscope comes up, and this guy's got a syringe of Demerol in his hand, right? I mean, this, to me, it looked like a turkey baster, right? Yeah. And he talks about, are you allergic to anything? Yeah, I told him, yeah, you know, Budweiser, Jack Daniels, and all forms of narcotics. And he says, man, get serious. I said, I am serious. I am in a life-threatening situation right now. And he says, man, you're going to be in a lot of pain if you don't take this. I told him, you give me the first one, you guarantee me I won't die. And he didn't understand. I said, let me ask it another way. If I don't take it, will I die? He says, no, if you don't take it, you won't die, but you're going to be in a lot of pain. I said, you know what, I got a guarantee from my God that he will give me nothing I can't handle. So you take the Demerol and give it to somebody that didn't use it. And on the way out, one of the guys that I sponsored worked with me. And at that time, he'd become vice president of this construction company. And the foreman, I told the foreman, you know what, you get word to Chuck, I did not use, because that was important to me. My wife, my kid came out in the truck, picked me up. A week later, I'm sitting over here in Bakersfield at Mercy Hospital, and I'm talking to this physician. They're telling me you're going to have to operate, and talking about the drugs, you know, post-operative drugs and pre-operative drugs and whatnot. And I tell him, you know what, I'm an addict. I don't use, period. And he said, well, you're going to be in a controlled environment. And I'm going, no, you don't understand. And I said, look, let's get on with the rest of this thing, and we'll see what's happening on it. So he gets to the part about the medical. Have you ever been operated on before? And I tell him, yes, I was. I was up in Fresno, and I run this thing down about, asked me, well, what was the operation for? And I said, excessive amount of lead in my system. And they buy in talking about what that, I said, well, they extracted 538 sludge from me. So, oh, you were law enforcement? I told them, no. And he says, well, I said, look, I'll bottom line this to you. You get me strung out on Demerol, and then you shut me down, I'll pick you and every nurse on this floor hostage until I get so much that I run out before it does. Do you hear me? And the guy wrote in 2-inch block letters, no drug. I'm very surprised that people with alphabets behind their names are more aware of this disease that we have. And I went through that, you know, 18 months after that. This was about 20 months ago, so it was about 16 months after that. Had to go in to get the plate removed. But they put a steel plate in my arm, had to go through therapy and all that. And one more time, they brought the anesthesiologist, and I told him, you better see my surgeon, I don't want to go through this again. And I have a problem with doctors that don't speak English. And so I go through that operation. And then here about 60 days ago, and it was a result from the motorcycle accident, I had to have a back operation. And this time I got a different surgeon. I had to go through the same thing with him. And I'll tell you how crazy I get. They operated on me at 6:30 in the morning. And they let them knock me out with gas, no drugs. 8:30 that night, I'm in the car. I'm on my way home. Because the hospital room reminded me of a penitentiary cell, and I couldn't deal with it. I told him, I'm free today. I'm free. So it's very easy. Step one, identification. The problem is pain. Step two is action. Step three is knowing that you're never going to be given anything that you can't handle. The only way I can deny being a winner today is to deny my higher power and make a choice to use. I don't believe in relapse. One of my kids ever tell me they relapse, I said, what I hear you say is you made a conscious choice to use. It's that simple. No, there are no mistakes. There are no mistakes in recovery. My fifth step, I had a lot of fun with it. The first thing I did was try to find somebody that looked worse than I did so I would look good. Now, and I'm in this kitty clink, and there's only about two or three of us down there doing the kind of time that we were doing. And I think, well, I couldn't get involved with the clergy at the time because I'm having some roughness with that. And I'd taken this third step, you know, about we turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. In early recovery, I got a little confused with, you know, religion and spiritual program. And I'm looking to, you know, work that third step a little bit better. This friend of mine came up and showed me this book, religious book, said that if I was a member of this religion, that if anyone transgressed limits, I could take their head. And I told him, this is the kind of religion I had been looking forward to. So if you wonder why a blue-eyed Irishman has the name of Rashad, that's why. I went into that, and I still carry that name. I still practice the religion, too. But in dealing with that fifth step, with my background, and I suggest this strongly to the newcomers when you write out that fourth step, don't put down the names of your crime partners. Huh? Don't put down dates, times, and places of any felony. Can be used against you in the court of law. Besides that, our ninth step talks about we don't hurt other people today, and we don't hurt ourselves. So when I got in touch with that fifth step, for all those years I used to type, and I was in clerical positions, and I got up where on a computer I'm typing 107 words a minute with about a 98% accuracy rate. So I do my type up my fourth and everything, and I take it out on the yard, and the sponsor tells me, you know what, share this with God. And I didn't want to do that because God already knew, and I went through all that argument. He told me to go out and do it anyway. And so I'm reading this out loud. The language was so filthy and nasty, I started crossing parts of it out. I had started with 9 pages. After I got all the filthy language marked out, and I went back and retyped it, I now have 5 pages. Now, I've heard this program described in 6 words. Trust God. Clean house. Help others. Those middle steps, 4 through 9, is clean house. Clean up my side of the street. Part of that is cleaning up my mouth. I don't have to stand up here and talk like I'm a practicing addict. No. I don't have to stand up here and disrespect every female in this room with my mouth, with the children that come in. I brought my mother to a meeting in Bridgecrest, and we got this person there, and he only knew one 12-letter hyphenated word. And he used it about 16 times in about 2 minutes, and my mother finally told him, so you use that word one more time and wash your mouth out with soap. Now, it's not necessary. To me, using filthy language is carrying the disease. Using language that is contained within the basic text of Narcotics Anonymous is carrying the message of Narcotics Anonymous, the clear message of Narcotics Anonymous. And when I took that fifth step, it was a rush. It was a rush. I wasn't as bad as I thought I was. And I wasn't as good as I thought I was. And I'm just an old brain-damaged addict, you know, working this program recovery. And contained within that fifth step was I've worked first step, I've worked second step, I've worked third step, I've worked the fourth step, and then the fifth step. And I felt good. At that time, I had picked up I'd been involved a little while. So I'm still carrying my 30-day chip. Of all the chips that I have picked off, I'm the proudest of my 30-day. Because I did it. Huh? I knew I could stay clean. Huh? And I had the people in this room to assist me, to help me, because I can't do this by myself. I need the people in here. Patrick, how much time do I have, by the way? Homeboy can run his head for a minute. Need to shut it down? Huh? When I'm done. How long do you people have? Okay. Sixth step. I get into this one. I like that one. By the way, it says defect of the character. It doesn't say character defects. I run into this. God has given me the gift of life, the gift of being a human being. You know, I've got plenty of air, I've got plenty of water, We got plenty of food, we got a shelter. Where I run into problems is on that thing they call family. Huh? My interaction with people. You know, I mentioned about, you know, the little newcomer coming in and whatnot, and to me that's an attitude check. Am I willing to go and introduce myself to this little hard body as much as I'm willing to introduce myself to a bag lady? Huh? There's a defect in there. Now, if I'm hitting on every newcomer that comes in, that's a defect. If I'm remaining celibate in a marriage situation, that's a defect. Now, if I'm eating, does it feel good? Now, if I blow up to 500 pounds, that's a defect of the character. If I become anemic or bulimic or anorexic or any rest, that's another defect, isn't it? No, to me, it's, you know, the balance. It's always the balance. It's like being on a teeter-totter. If I run real hard to the left, I'm going to bust my ass. If I run real hard to the right, I'm going to bust my ass. I need the balance. I need this balance. It's like there's a big difference between recovery-orientated service and service-orientated recovery. There's balance. We always need time for ourselves. Time to pick up that 10,000-pound pencil and put it on some paper. So when we talk about the defects of the character, if you guys, you know, like being in a relationship like I do, I would strongly suggest you be careful what you ask for. Okay? Be real, real careful what you ask. God sends you to give it to you. And you get it and you're going, boy, did I really ask for this? And it really gets to be a trip. I like that eight. Eight can be broke down in two parts. Again, it's a willingness. You know, make a list of all the people we had harmed. Well, that's easy to do. Forget the other part. Then when you get the list made, you look at it, you've already got it done. So that's the willingness part. The willingness. You know, the how of our program is the honesty, the open-mindedness, and the willingness. To me, the key is willingness coming in. Are you willing to do whatever is necessary? I had this little youngster show up on my doorstep one night. He's already flunked out of 6 drug rehab programs, right? He's talking about, you know, will you be my sponsor? And I said, well, how willing are you? He said, yeah, I'm willing. I thought, fine, I'm going to take you to Los Angeles. You're going to sleep on a rug in the bottom of a courthouse that we're rehabbing. You're going to eat peanut butter sandwiches. You're going to work for me for 40 hours for nothing. And you're going to make a meeting every night. You willing? He said, I'm willing. And he's got over 3.5 years in program right now. Married and got his own business. But he had that level of willingness. You know, the open-mindedness comes and the honesty comes. All that is in stages of the development. But the willingness, yeah, you're willing to sit up and show up. You make a commitment. I've never said no to a Narcotics Anonymous request. I just came out of H&I panels out at Laredo in Bakersfield. When I get there, it's about suiting up, showing up, making a lot of meetings. And when we get into that 8th step, when we're talking about willing to make amends, it is suggested the first person on that list is you. My sponsor told me I'm the first person on that list. I had heard at a meeting that a man said, if someone had done to me what I had done to me, I would have killed them. And I looked at that 8th step. I need to make amends to me. I need to start treating me better. Because the only way I can learn this program, if I learn to treat me better, then I can learn to treat you better. I can learn to disagree with myself without being disagreeable. I can learn that, you know, that I got this committee in my head that gives me bogus messages from time to time. But I also understand I'm chairman of that committee. And I got veto powers. And I understand steps. And I understand some traditions. So it's important. You might want a suggestion. The second person on that list is God. In the sense that he can represent all the nameless, faceless people we hurt that we may never see again, and be able to reach out to another addict. The best way I've ever found to make amends is working with newcomers, working with the people coming into this program. And that 9th step, please check in with your sponsor before you run out and make amends to the world, okay? There's a real reason for that. Some people don't understand. And the thing about the 9th step, you know, one of the cops that I tried up in Fresno, every time I go to Fresno, he's now a lieutenant. And I can never get a hold of him. I always leave messages for him. Because I want to make amends, and I don't know if he understands that or not. But I make the effort. My father passed while I was in prison. And it was 11 years before I could get to his grave to make those amends. And it wasn't for him. The amends I need to make to the policeman isn't for him, it is for me. Another way of saying amends is forgiveness. I need to learn how to forgive me. I need to learn how to stop hurting me. And by making these amends and getting in touch with these feelings, this means Narcotics Anonymous is about getting in touch with my feelings. Move into 11. I was taught this. Some of you can disagree. Please stay within first tradition. I was taught steps 1, 2, and 3. Then my sponsor skipped me to step 10. Continue to take personal inventory. Where was I today? How do I clean up the wreckage of the present? How do I keep in touch with what I'm feeling and where I'm at with what I'm feeling? That 10th step puts me back in the first step, puts me in the second step, puts me in the third step, and I can come back into 11. And 10, 11, and 12 are maintenance steps. They will help you maintain all the things you have learned and all the growth that you've experienced in the first three steps until you get that strength that's so inherent in our program. Then we're ready for 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. That's me. This is the way I did it. This is the way my sponsor did it. I'm not saying for you to do it this way. This is just simply the way I did it. The 10 keeps me in touch with what I'm doing. And if I did something good, I get a giant feel-good right here, I check in on that. What did I do so I can do it again? Now I'm at it. I want to feel good. No, it looks good, smells good, tastes good. I'm going to get addicted over it. You know, that's like, you know, this disease surfacing. I was changing out, you know, packing away some summer clothes, and my wife asked me, do you know how many pairs of walking shorts you have? I said, yeah, I've got, you know, 3 or 4. And she says, no, you have 16 pair. One in every conceivable color. Now, one wasn't enough. I got to have it all. If I look good in one, how am I going to look good in two? Huh? You guys know what I'm talking about. That's the cold part, you know. It's the real, you know, the value of our program. One addict working with another addict, because we understand. The things we've done may have been different, but the feelings, you know what I'm talking about when I say isolation, fear, anger, being hurt, being sad, we all know. See, we really have two things in common. We have a disease, but what's most important, we got a program recovery. 11th step, sought through prayer and meditation. To improve our conscious contact with God as we understand Him. Praying only not for knowledge of His will for us today and the power to carry that out. Sometimes I've had to ask for the willingness to carry that out. And I get a message from God and I tell Him, no, I don't want to do that. I'm going to argue. I'm a knucklehead. I'm hard-headed on this. Also, because of early recovery, I got into 10, 11, and 12. I got into meditation real early in recovery. Prayer and meditation in early recovery. 12th step, having had a spiritual awakening. If anybody has an understanding of that, please share with me after the meeting. Okay? Because it's to me, I don't do mornings too well. My wife will put my cup of coffee by the nightstand, do one of these, and then book. Huh? She does not speak to me until I usually have at least 2, sometimes 3, and I tell everybody, well, that's when I do steps 1, 2, 3, and 11, is where I'm having my coffee. And my wife will tell you, the only reason I do 1, 2, 3, and 11 while I'm having coffee is nobody else can stand me during this period of time. I'm just, you know, I don't have an awakening. And to me, that's what that first part of that 12th step is. To me, it's been a slow process, a very, very slow process. But it comes with experience, not necessarily time. It just simply comes with experience. And it's so important that, you know, the last admonition of the 12th step, it simply says to practice these principles in all of our affairs. You know what? At first, I couldn't do it for an hour and a half. You know, come in and sit in these rooms. And I got comfortable with me. And I got to go in with the homeboys that were members of this program. We got to, you know, talking step and tradition there and step and tradition. And it can be practiced in all aspects of our lives. And I know you guys want to get in the dance, so I'm going to just say just a couple more things here and I'm going to shut down. For the newcomers and other people who have been in this program, please, please keep coming back. If you keep coming back, you're going to get an understanding of steps and the traditions. If you keep coming back, you're going to get an understanding of God. And to know God is to know life. Thank you for letting me share. I'll keep coming back.